Well, when I hear that music, I know that we're going to have a good baseball conversation, or a conversation about life, or about Original Joes as well. And that brings Kerry Crowley to the table, so to speak, from the Bay Area News Group. Kerry, how are you?
You know what, Marty? I love the song. It reminds me that we're coming up on the longest day of the year, June 21st. And nothing better to me than hanging out. You know, I live in the Sunset District. I can walk outside my house and check out the beach and see the water, and I do it at 9 o'clock at night and the sun's still up, and the only thing that I wish was accompanying that were baseball games on my television right now.
Well, you said something very appropriate, you know, sort of the metaphor for what's happening, the longest day of the year, and the way baseball and the ownership are knocking heads here, and you and I have talked about it over a good 6 weeks, 7 weeks or so. Nothing much changes. It's sort of just rearranging the chairs, but the living room looks exactly the same. And, you know, they've set these artificial deadlines, and it sounds like tomorrow, Sunday, will be another deadline to get a response from the players. And frankly, these two sides have not budged much either way.
No, they really haven't. You know, in a negotiation, you hope that either side is willing to make concessions. And it seems like the players have made a few more, but they haven't moved off of that prorated pay that they initially agreed to with the owners back in March. And the owners really haven't made any concessions. And so, you know, I saw something on social media this week, Marty, where it was a chef offering a patron at the restaurant a burger. He was holding up ground beef and said, "Would you like one burger?" And the patron said, "Oh, I don't know. What else do you have?" And so he split the ground beef into two and said, "Well, would you like two burgers?" And the patron looked at him confused and then said, well, maybe something else. And then the chef took those two burgers and split them into four and said, "Well, how about four burgers?" And the patron finally realized what was going on. He was getting the same meal regardless of the way it was being presented, and that's exactly what the owners have done to the players throughout this negotiation process.
Yeah, I've seen it before. We went through it in 1981 and 1994, that led to the cancellation of the World Series that year. We have seen this before, and I commented on it. You and I have talked about it. We'll talk about it on the show tonight with many guests that come on after you as well. And they just don't seem to budge. These are two sides that, boy, when they dig their heels in, they dig their heels in. So where do you think this gets resolved? Do you have I know guesses now, really, if you're Jason Stark or Bob Nightingale or Scott Miller or, you know, some of the Jeff Passan, they're sort of at their wit's end. Where do you see this ending up?
You know, it's certainly starting to feel like it's going to be a 48-game season mandated by Rob Manfred. And, Marty, I think that is just incredibly unfortunate. I think that both sides could make a few concessions here. There could be a longer season. The players may not have to accept prorated pay, but maybe they get 90-95% of 70 games or so. I do think a season is possible, and I think that a season like that would be much healthier for the future of the sport. But with the way we're headed, it's not really going to be a resolution. It's going to be a 48-game season that's going to be forced upon the players, and that's ultimately going to lead to a labor dispute that is going to have long-lasting and damaging effects when the current collective bargaining agreement is up in December 1st, 2021. I really do think that baseball is eventually headed for a lockout, because if they can't agree on terms right now, we know that there's a huge gulf that exists between the two sides in terms of the next collective bargaining agreement. And so, you know, it's unfortunate because it's damaging to the sport. It's damaging to all the young people out there who are deciding whether to play baseball or whether to play another sport. And so to see this happening, it's just discouraging.
Yeah, it's damaging to America as well. You know, with all that's going on, here we have another dispute that is unresolvable and polarizing. We've had enough polarization here in the last 4 months to last me a lifetime. So, all right, we'll move on. I'm glad you're back on the baseball beat this week. And what brought you back, of course, was the draft on Wednesday of round one, and then rounds two through five with the two comp picks on Thursday. Was baseball successful in at least getting the draft in front of the public on MLB or ESPN? What did you think about that part of it?
I thought so. I thought that baseball did a nice job with the presentations. I thought that the ESPN broadcast was a little more sophisticated and a little more detailed than the MLB broadcast. and so I enjoyed watching that a little bit more. Kylie McDaniel had some really good prospect analysis there. And having that as a showcase right now was important, Marty, because it is an event that's built on dreams and dreams of players who've been working every single year of their life for a moment like the one that they experienced on Wednesday or Thursday when they heard their name called. And so that was really cool to see, you know, with all the bitterness that's going on, with all the, unfortunate bickering between the two sides and how this negotiation has ended up playing out in public because of ownership leaks. It was really cool to see a moment of positivity for the sport. I think that baseball needed it. And I just hope that the players and owners realize that they have positive momentum to build on right now. There's an opportunity to get a deal done within the next week and move on from the draft and that, you know, re-engage fans and give them a concrete starting date for the regular season and say, okay, baseball is going to happen this year and it's going to be more than just a small, ridiculous 48-game sample size.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the genuineness, the emotion, the family, the extended family, the kids, for once baseball got back to the love of the game. And I realize the love of the game for the kids who got drafted are millions of dollars, but it didn't matter if they got $1 million or $5. It was the realization of a lifelong dream for these kids, and I liked it. I liked the reaction, even though the interviews were silly, and you ask the questions of these kids, and you know they can't answer anything. But there was an absolute genuineness to it that we haven't seen from baseball, and that's why I liked it. All right, let's Gary Crowley with us. We're going to talk more about the draft as the show goes on tonight. But, you know, everyone loves to do the mock drafts, and I know you and Henry tease each other about the mock draft. You're probably up to your 2021 draft already. but, Patrick Bailey, my God, nobody saw Patrick Bailey for the Giants. Nobody. I didn't see a mock draft that had his name in it.
You know, all we've heard, Marty, for the past 2 years is that Joey Bart is the anointed catcher of the future. He's the future franchise cornerstone who's going to take over for Buster Posey and ensure that the franchise doesn't miss a beat at one of the most valuable positions on the diamond. So I was stunned initially to see the drafting of Patrick Bailey, the North Carolina State catcher, just because it felt like, you know, if you're so confident in Bart and there are several first-round talents on the board who can help you out, you know that you've struggled to develop pitching depth in the past few years, why not go at another position? And so to hear Farhan Zaidi and Michael Holmes defend the pick and explain the pick that he was the best player available, you can never have too much catching, was interesting. And you obviously can understand their perspective a little bit, but I just don't really envision a future where the Giants have two really strong two-way catchers in Bart and Bailey playing every day, two of them catching 81 games a year and then trading off at the designated hitter spot when it eventually comes to the National League. It's really hard for me to envision that dream of a future scenario that the Giants clearly did when they drafted Bailey. So maybe one of these two players will get traded eventually. Maybe one of them doesn't pan out and the other takes over as that great everyday catcher after Buster Posey leaves the team. But it was certainly curious to see them go with Bailey in a draft that seemingly had a lot of high upside guys at the top.
Well, he's a catcher. He's been a catcher since 5 years old at NC State. He called his own game as a catcher, which is very unusual in college. You know that. You've been around the college game. So let's see what happens. But I agree with you. Does that make Bart a DH first baseman at some point? Who knows where these things are going to end up? But it was a surprise with all the upside talent. And we know high school players were not picked early on in this draft because you didn't get to see their seasons. And college players were much more draftable, as you're going to tell us about rounds 2 through 5 on the second day. All right, so Patrick Bailey, welcome to the Giants. And wherever you're going to play, it is going to be catcher. And Joey Bart's probably scratching his head at this point. All right. Now we go to day two. And you've had a chance to talk to Farhan about his approach on day two. Of course, every Arizona State University baseball player has been picked other than the bat boy, I think. So the Giants did get in there for that. But the first pick of the second round was a third baseman pitcher type from San Diego State. How about that?
Yeah, really interesting selection in terms of going with Casey Schmidt out of San Diego State. He was a guy who starred in the Cape Cod League for the Kitsap Cavaliers last summer. He hit two home runs in the championship game and then came in and closed down the ninth inning in the Cape Cod League Championship, so he took home MVP honors. And that's a league that the Giants have long scouted. Marty, you and I have talked about this. It's where Buster Posey, Tim Lincecum, Brandon Crawford, Brandon Belt, Joe Panik all played. And so there's clearly some lineage there. Joey Bart, Hunter Bishop as well. And I like the pick because he's versatile. And, you know, if Casey Schmidt works out as a third baseman and eventually becomes the everyday starter after Evan Longoria, it's going to be a good pick for the Giants. But let's say that he stalls along the way, like so many second-round picks for the Giants have through the years. Maybe Casey Schmidt can make the big leagues as a middle reliever 4 or 5 years down the road. I'm not sure, but I do think that there's two-way potential with this guy, and you're drafting someone who can help impact the big league squad in a variety of ways. And so to have that plus arm, the Matt Chapman-like arm at the hot corner is really important. And I did end up kind of – that pick grew on me, I will say, Marty, as time has gone on.
All right. Well, we'll see. You know, the interesting thing is there's no one there that you're going to say, boy, he's going to be a superstar. Or, what? Boy, I can't wait to see his velocity in a game. And that's kind of the interesting part of it. So we'll see. Farhan wanted to build the depth of the farm system with some versatility, and it looks like he's happy with rounds 2 through 5. In the third round, which was actually their fifth pick because they had the two comp picks for Madison Bumgarner and Will Smith before that, they got a kid from De La Salle High School, a left-hander. He sounded like he's got a good upside. He sounds like it's a low slot delivery. I've seen it. A little bit different from the lefty, not over the top, so to speak. But do you like the third-round pick?
You know, Marty, it would not stun me at all if 5 years from now we're talking about Kyle Harris and the lefty out of De La Salle as the very best pick in this Giants class. He was the only high schooler they took, and so obviously the senior season cut short, but the Giants felt like they had seen enough of him his junior year at De La Salle, and then on the under-18 Team USA circuit, which they scouted closely as well, Kyle Harrison was a star pitcher on that team, and so there was certainly a level of comfort there that they didn't necessarily have with other high schoolers around the country, and I think that that's why you saw them pick, and I'm certain that Harrison, who I believe has been advised by Scott Boras throughout the process, will be signing an overslot bonus and taking up some of the Giants bonus pool. But that's the size of the point. I think that he is a really strong starting pitching candidate who can maybe have the same type of impact in the system that you're starting to see Seth Corey have, who's now the Giants' top-rated pitching prospect, 2017 third-round pick out of a Utah high school, who was kind of undervalued heading into the draft. And then now that he's succeeded in the Giants' farm system, all of a sudden he's considered one of the best pitching prospects in baseball. There's some top 100 buzz around him. So it would not surprise me at all if Kyle Harrison was of the similar mold and ended up rising quickly through the minor leagues, even though he's still a high school kid.
All right, we'll see. I like it. I can go on with that analysis with you. Keith Snyder was a scout who recommended him, and he's our Northern California scout here. I've known him for years, and he's a very, very astute man. He knows the Bay Area baseball scene. So if Keith Snyder says pick him, all right, he's got my vote on that. Interesting, you know, they got another player from Arizona State to go with Hunter Bishop from last year. They got another pitcher from North Carolina State to go with Patrick Bailey. How about that?
Yeah, they certainly felt comfortable with the selections in this draft, Marty. We talked about, you know, this Farhan Zaidi, Michael Holmes draft leadership team that the Giants have in their baseball operations department has gone after North Carolina State players now with acquiring Will Wilson, the shortstop who was the Angels' 2019 first-round draft pick. They got him at the winter meetings. Then they go with Bailey, and then they use the compensatory selection that they got from Madison Bumgarner to draft Nick Swinney, the left-hander who has three-plus pitches, and they think that he can be a starting candidate. And then R.J. Dabovich comes to them in the fourth round, who they really developed a relationship last year when they saw Hunter Bishop at Arizona State. And so I think that in a year where the coronavirus pandemic obviously shortened seasons and ripped the scouts away from in-person opportunities to take a look at these players, it was not surprising at all to see them go with familiarity, to see them go with players that they obviously know well and are comfortable with, because when you're drafting, you want to, you know, find a way to get as many players with major league caliber potential as possible. And if you're kind of drafting in the dark and you don't know as much about certain players, it makes a lot more sense to take the guys you do trust, to take the guys that you have known since high school, like the Giants have with Casey Schmidt, who was the second round pick. They've been scouting him for a long time too. So I think that they ultimately stayed true to who they are as a front office and didn't veer too far off their pre-draft plan.
Yeah, I'd say they made safe picks.
Yeah, I would agree.
That's the way. All right, the last one, we haven't touched on the shortstop from Dallas Baptist, and it looks like he may have some power, and no one's really talked about him too much.
Yeah, Jimmy Glewenke, interesting choice out of Dallas Baptist. I think he probably would have been available if they waited on him and took him in the third round when Kyle Harrison was chosen, but they obviously really liked him. Michael Holmes said that the shortstop out of Dallas Baptist can stay at shortstop in the minor leagues, but he can also play third base. He can also play second base. He's a guy who walked almost as much as he struck out as a sophomore in college last season. Also played in the Cape League for my born Braves, so that was cool to see. I know his host mother well from the born Braves, the Cape Cod League, and so I think that, you know, Jimmy Glewenke is the one guy who I kind of wonder whether he's just a utility player who they'll move around the diamond and hope that he eventually hits enough to make it to the major league level. He's the one guy who I was a little bit skeptical of, but of course it's way too soon to judge. You know, we won't know much about this draft class for 4 or 5 years, and so it'll be fun to look back and think how the Giants scouting department approached this very unique, very rare draft when we do look back at it 4 to 5 years from now, Marty.
You know, Kerry Crowley, of course, with us. You spent so much time in the Cape Cod League doing games there, broadcasting there. You got to see so many players. Did you sort of develop an eye and sort of say to yourself, boy, that guy is going to hit in the major leagues? And did you sort of have that? Or even say he's going to hit in the major leagues and then the guy didn't hit in the major leagues? What was it like for you watching these players?
So there's a few different guys who I definitely knew right away. Okay. He's probably a major league talent. I think that Kevin Newman of the Pittsburgh Pirates was the MVP back when I was back there. He and Richie Martin, who was a Rule 5 draft pick for the Orioles last year, you got the sense that they were a cut above. You didn't know who the stars were going to be, Marty. And I'll give you an example. The first base platoon on the team that I broadcast in 2015, the Born Braves, was when the team was facing a left-handed pitcher, Pete Alonso would play first base. And when the team was facing a right-handed pitcher, Brendan McKay would play first base. And he was the pitcher who's now in the major leagues with the Tampa Bay Rays. But Pete Alonso didn't hit a home run that summer. And he didn't perform well in the home run derby in the Cape Cod League. And I thought, you know, second round pick, maybe this guy eventually makes it to major leagues. I don't know if he's anything more than a backup, though. And then Pete Alonso goes out and mashes 50 home runs as a rookie. So I think that there are some guys who you have a general sense of, but I also don't have the scout's eye where I could tell you, okay, he's very projectable. He's obviously going to add power. He's going to add muscle to his frame. I was not at that level. I wish I could tell you that I was, though.
Yeah, but you see the athletes, and Pete Alonso is just saving it up. He didn't want to hit him. What did he want to hit him there for? He's saving him up for the
exactly.
big leagues.
Exactly.
Of course, the University of Florida as well. Sunday morning, if I'm not mistaken, 6 a.m., the Giants can then start spending $20,000 for undrafted players. Many who probably think they have a bigger upside than $20,000 would go to junior college and come back next year and do it. But do you expect the Giants to be very active in this free agent $20,000 undrafted market?
You know, it depends on the definition of very. I think, you know, Farhan and Michael Holmes have been very reluctant to tell us how many players they're interested in targeting. My ultimate guess is around 5 to 10, just because I don't think they're looking to add, 25 to 30 players in this class. And I really don't think, Marty, that the caliber of talent out there is going to be as good as folks think that it is, that all of a sudden you're going to have every guy who was going to be a sixth-round pick willing to sign for $20,000, because a lot of these guys can either go back to school if they're college players, reclassify for the 2021 draft, and then make a whole lot more money, or they're high school players who can go to college or junior college for a year, reclassify, and then make a whole lot more money. So I would be surprised if the Giants felt there were enough players to really dive into the double digits and add 12 to 15, but you never know, because this is something that's never happened in my lifetime, so I have no feel for what a undrafted signing period could look like. I do know that they're very, very serious about the recruiting process. They're planning on using major league players. They're planning on using Gabe Kapler. They're planning on using major league coaches to assist with the recruiting. And I'm really interested to see how this plays out. And I think this will be a big topic of conversation when we talk again next week.
Well, it'll be fun. Kerry, thanks for taking the time. You're out at Original Joe's this week for a little butter cake?
I was. I got my butter cake. And, you know, Marty, what they've stapled on the bags now, I think that you got to ask John Dugan, but they might be opening a third location somewhere. Rumor has it might be in West Portal, because they've got this little menu now that says pizza is coming soon.
Yes.
And the pizza menu is incredible. I mean, they've got every topping under the sun. They've got really great combinations. And, you know, you and I both know if Original Joe's does it, Original Joe's does it very well. They do it better than anyone else. And so if Original Joe's is serving pizza, Marty, I may as well just eat there every night of the week.
All right. It is coming to West Portal. The coronavirus and everything that's gone on has slowed everything down. And obviously because of what can be done and can't be done. But sure, that was in the plans. And they had hoped to open something by June. So there'll be more information on that. But folks in West Portal, get ready. It is going to happen. Kerry, great to have you on. How are the folks? They doing okay?
Yeah, they're doing well this weekend, Marty. You know, can't complain. So we're all good in the Crowley household.
All right. As I say every week to you, we'll know more by next Saturday. We'll know more by
we
next
will.
Saturday.
We will certainly right? see more animosity, right?
We have to. At some point, they have to come to some understanding. This is a tough one. Kerry, take care of yourself. Be safe. Glad you're back on the baseball beat, and we'll follow you on the Bay Area News Group. Take care of yourself.
Thank you so much, Marty.
All right, that is Kerry Crowley. More coming up, KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.